Well, let's talk about Rhea Rothberg. 31 years ago, you were pretty young. I mean, you're kind of in the middle of your income-earning years or the beginning of your income-earning years. Were you doing something other than art?
No, not really. I wasn't. My husband was.
Okay.
My then-husband. I did venture off into something else about 12 years ago. Wayne and I opened Lunatique, mm-hmm. which was probably maybe the first tapas bar. Tapas?
Yes.
In New Mexico. And it was where Blades Bistro is now.
Okay.
And so then I became an executive chef and still do chef work, but just privately.
Had you done your culinary training before?
I had done my culinary training starting at my grandmother's elbow.
Okay.
And then my mother's elbow. So it's a home-trained kind of chefdom. Lunatique was a big hit, and everybody still misses mm-hmm. it. So
I know what you mean, because I mean, like so many people, I watch a lot of food TV here. A lot of the ones on the Create channel are really interesting. And I'm not sure you can tell that the host or the chef, the cook, whatever. I'll just ask the question. Can you tell who's classically trained and who's just grandma trained?
Well, there's a lot of crossover. And, you know, generally if someone becomes a professional, they have found the classic training somewhere without necessarily, you know, going to France or something. But I can tell how do I answer that tactfully?
We're all adults.
I don't actually think it matters, to tell you the truth. I think if food is good, food is good. And if it nourishes your soul and your palate, that's what makes it great.
Right. So
I don't really
care. You enjoyed
that? I did enjoy it, and I still cook the green room meals for the jazz artists who come through and perform at the Outpost.
Okay.
And the New Mexico Jazz Festival. And, you know, the arts cross over a lot, and I just consider my kitchen arts part of my art. And then I love the fact that it gets tied in with music. So, you know.
Well, in the kitchen arts, that's more demanding because you don't have to paint every day, but you have to eat every day, or at least every couple days.
Okay.
I know artists tell me, or musicians tell me, yeah, I have to practice every day. I have to.
I mean, you don't have to draw every day, but, you know, some of us just feel like we want to.
So where did you come from?
Well, I grew up mostly in St. Louis.
Okay.
And, yeah.
In those days, was that a good place to grow up?
It was a great place to grow up. And also, I went to Washington University for a couple of years there, which was a great art school.
Certainly.
So that was good. And then I kind of had to break out of the Midwest and went down to Mexico and lived in Mexico and went to school there for a year and then finished up in a small college back in Missouri and near my folks, who then promptly moved to Texas. And, you know, one thing led to another. Ended up living in Atlanta for 3 years and then on the Navajo Reservation two times in Kayenta, which is how we fell in love with the Southwest. And had to get back here as soon as possible.
Sure. Had you been to Mexico before?
I'd been to border towns because my grandparents had moved from Omaha to South Texas, and then my parents followed them eventually. So they lived in a little town called Alamo, Texas, which is in the Rio Grande Valley, near McAllen.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to do lots of little side trips all along that border, but I had never been deep into Mexico.
And we're in?
Very central Mexico, San Miguel.
Okay. Because, I mean, as probably everybody knows, the border towns are so different
than
you get to the interior.
Well, and they're so different now than they were when I was going as a kid. You know,
right.
They're completely different now.
Which was more fun?
Oh, you know, I loved being there in the 70s, and going down to go to school.
Chaos
art
can
school,
be
it
exciting.
Was fabulous. It was it was exactly the right thing for me at the right time in my life, so... Yeah, and I've never gone back to San Miguel because I know that's changed too, and I just find new places.
They probably have parking meters and streetlights.
No. Well, not downtown because it's historic.
So at what point did you go, I'm an artist? I mean, did you grow up drawing and painting?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to be a ballerina, when I was really little.
But little girl didn't.
But my parents were both musicians and involved in the arts, and then my mom ended up... it's a long story, but she ended up the director of the Missouri Arts Council, and then she went to the NEA. So I've always been surrounded by either artists, musicians, so forth, or the people who administrate and help those people survive.
So it's kind of like a showbiz family in a
way.
Well,
in
art.
A way, I guess so. But, you know, it was just, I don't know, it was one of those things. And then I was burned when I was 7 and spent several months in the hospital and did a lot of drawing then and kind of gave up on the ballet, although I still danced till I was about 16. But yeah, I don't think there was really ever any question for me. It was just always my path.
But at some point, there is a parental or family or societal pressure. It says, all right, I'm graduating high school. Yeah, yeah, be a nurse.
Right, right. Well, I wanted to be a veterinarian when I was small, too, but then I found out you had to be good at math and science. And I was pretty good at science, but awful at math, so.
Being scientifically trained, I don't know how you can do any science without math.
Right.
So that,
well,
that is
biology,
kind of
you know, I'm talking high school and college. Okay. I never did anything.
Oh, if you can cut the worm open.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I never liked.
I worked in the lab a little bit in Kayenta.
That's
you know,
fun stuff,
as
isn't
a,
it?
Yeah, it was great. But I was just not meant for that. I was meant to go sit on the mesa and draw.
Well, so at some point, you have to worry about income. And did you go, I'm going to sell my art?
Yeah, and I was lucky. I always was able to sell some art. And that also ebbs and flows. Wayne and I, at one point, were in galleries all over the country. And then when we opened the restaurant, we had to pull out of that because we were running a restaurant. Guess what? It takes 7 days a week.
Oh, you thought you could still do art?
Yeah. Well, we did a little. But we sold our art at the restaurant, and that's the only art we showed. So actually, we developed a whole new client base for the art in those 2 years in the restaurant, which has lasted.
Sure.
So that was good. And, you know, making a living with your art, I don't even know if I want to talk about that, to tell you the truth.
You could say that your restaurant with your art could be a very clever business arrangement where you have the food, but the primary purpose is to show your art.
Yeah, but that wasn't
the case. I know that wasn't the case.
But yes, we had a captive audience. And I think also because we're abstract painters, abstract painting takes a little more time to soak in, I would say. The longer you look, the more you see. So if someone's sitting there for 2 hours or an hour and a half, eating and drinking and having a good time, but also looking over the shoulder of their companion at something they've never seen before. It really seemed to work.
Well, tell me about the first time where you said, did you say, I'm going to sell this piece of art, or someone said, I'd like to buy that piece of art? And that's what I meant.
Oh, you know, the first time, gosh, I don't know, probably in high school, I was in some show and something sold and I...
But you had enough of an inventory and a self-confidence to say, I could put this in a show. That's good for high school, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that.
There may not be a direct, it may be different for everybody.
I think it is, you know, each artist is unique that way. And
because I had a friend who was really, really smart in high school, and this was around the time I think we had just gone to the moon or had some shots of the moon, and his whole basement had all the lunar maps and everything. Mm-hmm. And he was 17, and he was freaking out because he said every major scientist has made their most important discovery before 18.
Oh, dear.
So the kind of pressure that, that's not what you need at 70, but...
No. No, and
I'm still waiting for
thing.
My major
there are
accomplishment.
There are some artists that are so great at the business part. They're so good at selling. They may not even be very good artists, but they're great at selling, and that's really their art. I mean, and then some people can do both and do it beautifully, and some people really need somebody else to do that part for them,
right?
And just concentrate.
Well, and for myself. When I have purchased art, because I decided when I was living near D.C., I had a lot of walls.
Great.
And I was never a fan of wallpaper, and it was expensive. So I bought various pieces of art from different galleries or whatever, and I could change them in the room, and they, you know, I found the price point that worked for me, but, you know, you have to pay a certain amount if you want it to be good. So I'm kind of, and also, you know, going to museums and stuff, that you don't see a lot of abstract, at least not at this National Gallery of Art and stuff, at least when I was going. So now I'm seeing a whole variety of art. And even in painting, it's not classic painting. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand how you can say that one's $500, that one's $5,000.
Uh-huh.
You know, if it's a pointillist classical painter, you can go, yeah, he was really good or he really sucked. This is harder, not only for, I think, the customer mm-hmm. to say, I think that's a reasonable price, mm-hmm. or for the artist to go, that one is fantastic.
Right.
Is there a science to that at all?
Well, different artists will answer that question differently, I think. Of course, a reputation makes people's prices go up, but... you know, pricing is fairly arbitrary. If a gallery's involved in doubling the price that they, you know, they're giving the artist half of what they collect in most cases.
Right.
So that affects the price. Your age and reputation and experience are part of it. The recognition of your talent and gift is certainly a major part of it, but there are all those aspects that feed into that.
Right. Or if you know,
in my career, as time goes by, I just keep raising the price per square inch, and that's how I do it. It's just a formula. I don't decide one painting is better than another and charge more for that. It's how big is it?
So you could just keep making
it's
larger.
It's just a way of quantifying. Here's how I get paid for what I'm offering. Because right. otherwise, how do you do it? You know, it's just so. Here's my formula. You know, I kind
you just
of
keep
the
making
formula.
Bigger pictures.
Well, I make little ones too, but yeah.
That's or I guess in some instances, hopefully not relevant to the Placidus studio tour, that some people are often famous for other things.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure a Charlie Manson sketch would be expensive, not because it's good.
Right, right.
But we don't have any of those.
No. Now we have Jim Fish, who makes wine.
Yes.
And he also carves wood.
Okay.
So.
Well. So that,
there you go.
That
so
helps his
I'm
marketing.
Not sure, you know, and he's a poet, and so there are a lot of people who do lots of things.
Well, can you be a poet in the Placidus studio tour?
It hasn't come up, but yes, I think we had a couple where one person, the husband was a writer and he was selling books. He paid the fee and was on the tour. Yeah, you know, but it's basically mm-hmm. a visual art thing. And
we were talking about cleaning up your garage or your studio so people could come in.
Mm-hmm. Or not. They want to see the real studio?
Yeah, that's just behind the curtain.
Right.
When someone's making a decision, you know, to participate in 2017,
okay.
do they have to expect a certain amount of parking spaces, or do I need, my studio doesn't need to be big enough? Because a lot of people have very small studios because they're
right.
not entertaining half of Placidus.
Absolutely. And parking can be a problem. We always urge the artists to talk to all their neighbors if parking is just street parking ahead of time. Talk to your neighbor and say, look, there are going to be a bunch of people here. What are your concerns? We tell people to buy orange tape and, you know, mark off their chemisa area so people who come from the city and don't realize that we love our weeds.
Yes. That's one of the best parts. No lawnmower.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, so yes. And then the other thing is, and that's why there are 49 sites, even though there are 59 studios, is because some people absolutely do not have. It's either impossible to get there for the masses, or it's too small, or they really don't have an official studio. So they double up with someone else. And that seems to work out just fine. We don't want to do a lot of that because people come out here to see the studios. But if somebody really doesn't have much to offer in the way of mm-hmm. studio and they have art that they want to share, they can double up. They
right.
both still have to pay and they both
yeah.
have to work and all of that.
Sure.
But,
the couple times
so
we've gone
happens.
Since we're newbies, as I mentioned several times, I'm not an artist, but my wife dabbles in the arts, and so I like seeing the different studios or whatever, but I look at it more of from a okay, we're building a house, let me see how they put the studio together.
Sure.
So it's there's something for everybody.
There is, and there are lots of motivations, as you described,
and
yeah.
really interesting people.
fascinating. Placidas is just a unique community in many ways. And, of course, any artistic community is also unique. So,
right. But not to pick on any other artistic community, but they seem to be a little snootier in some of the other more well-known, no names, but we can all guess. Mm-hmm. We just seem more, we're just nicer here.
Well, we certainly are. We're certainly nicer. Yeah. But, you know, actually, you might try going back to the snooty places with a different expectation and find out that it's different.
It's true.
Or not. I mean, you know.
Well, as you know from your tapas bar, that you could have a bad night.
Never. Never had a bad night.
Never. Well, I mean, from a customer's perspective, they have to try it again. That's a rough location.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, people actually even were coming from Santa Fe, so it turned out to be pretty good. And I think Blades would tell you the same thing, that people come from, you know, from Albuquerque. It's not just a neighborhood place. But we really wanted to be a neighborhood hangout, so our goals were a little different.
Right. I had a most important question. Oh, let's talk about living on a Navajo reservation.
Okay.
How does one do that?
Well, my ex-husband was working for the Indian Health Service.
Okay.
And Kayenta had a clinic. It didn't have a hospital. Tuba City was the closest hospital. And there was a core of people there working, both Anglos and Navajo, at the clinic. And most of the doctors were, some of the doctors, I would say, were paying back the Public Health Service or some government agency who had helped them pay for medical school.
Right.
In our case, we were just there because my husband was, he just really wanted to do it. And we fell in love with the place, the people.
Was this a long conversation before he applied, or did he come home one day and say, hey, Rhea, you don't need those high heels anymore?
Oh, I don't know. It certainly was an easy conversation. I was ready to go, so it was fine.
And how was it? I mean, I've lived in communities where I was the minority.
Well, they did kind of have us, the clinic people, clustered together. And we actually were assigned to live in a trailer. We lived in a trailer both times we were there. Doctors, nurses, lab people. We were all kind of stuck together. That's just the way they had the housing. And the teachers all lived in another area, and it was the coal miners all lived in another area. It was kind of segregated in that way.
Sure.
But I ended up teaching at the high school. I started as they needed substitute teachers, and I signed up to be a substitute teacher. And after doing like first grade and fourth grade and, you know, all these, every day a different thing, not every day of the week, but I got a call one day from the high school, and the shop teacher had been made, the wood shop teacher had been made the dean of boys. So he wasn't going to be able to be in his classroom in the afternoons anymore, and they wanted someone artsy.
Because shop is.
So there you go. Yeah. So I ended up being the wood shop teacher, although I didn't really. The boys taught me. I learned how to use a lathe, and
that could be
it was
fun.
Great. But they needed somebody, you know, an adult who could turn everything off if there were an emergency and so forth.
Yeah, knew how to put on a Band-Aid.
Cover the.
Call 911.
Right, right. So it was a great experience, and I got to know the high school Navajo boys who are very shy for the most part, and I would never have gotten to know those kids without doing that job.
Is that just culturally? Because high school boys tend to be not very shy.
Oh, no, no. It's cultural. And, you know, not competitive, not just shy. Mm-hmm. And it was, so it turned out to be a nice exchange because they had questions about my world and I had questions about their world. Mm-hmm. And so it was great.
And you went back? You left and then?
Well, I taught the second time we were there.
Okay.
I didn't teach the first time.
Oh, it was part of that rotation.
We just, it turned out we had another year off and so we went back.
Okay. And how is your Navajo?
Oh, terrible. It's a very difficult language. But, you know, my yate is pretty good and ehyehe is thank you. And they appreciate it if you try, just like any place.
One of our house hunting trips out here, the clerk at the hotel was Navajo.
And it's a beautiful language.
All we got was yate. And it was our first real up close and personal physical contact with a Navajo, And it was such a great sales pitch for, yes, you need to move out here.
Oh, good.
These people are amazing.
They are amazing. And when I was there, 79 was the first year, and then back in the early 80s. And at that time, Kayenta was actually still very, very traditional and not at all like it is now. I mean, there was only a trading post. There was no grocery store. There was no movie theater. There was no McDonald's. It was the trading post and the Golden Sands Cafe and a couple of motels because it's close to Monument Valley.
Right.
So it was a tourist pass-through, but it wasn't really a tourist spot, you know, and it was much smaller, and it was amazing. I mean, almost everybody still spoke Navajo, and the older people all wore traditional dress. I mean, it was great. And it kind of made up for my parents not letting me go to the Peace Corps.
Okay.
Because it was sort of living with a bunch of people with a goal, you know, sort of a common goal, which was to help and be someplace totally immersed in.
Sure.
Was it
appreciated, or is just like, you know, you
I think
owe
like
us
everywhere.
This.
Oh no, it wasn't in any kind of, oh, you owe us anything. I think it was definitely appreciated, and like any place, you're kind of an invading force in a way, but
again for the Navajos.
Oh God. Yep. Yeah but
I would not be. I think if I were Native American, I don't think I would be able to turn the other cheek quite so easily, mm-hmm. even generations later. Mm-hmm. Not that I want to stir up any controversy, but
leave this out.
Yeah, I think it's because we were watching a episode on A&E called The West, uh-huh. and it kind of chronicled from the very beginning.
Yeah,
and just it wasn't good times.
No. We can be really stupid, us white folks.
Yes. So then how did you end up in Placitas?
Well, we went back after Kayenta to Atlanta for 3 years, mm-hmm. and my husband started searching for a job back in the Southwest for when he finished his residency. And it turned out that a bunch of the people that we'd worked with in Kayenta had moved to the Albuquerque area.
Hmm.
So when we came here, not only did we connect with a great new group of people when we discovered Placitas, but we also reconnected with these people that we'd stayed friends with. I mean, the bonds we made with those, with all those people working together so closely and living so closely. And no TV. We entertained each other.
Or cell phones.
No cell phone. No, none of that. So we really got to know each other, you know, deeply, quickly. And we're all still friends. So it was a very wonderful place to come to. And we lived in Albuquerque for about 6 months thinking, well, we thought we'd live in Albuquerque for a year and learn our way around. And 6 months later, we were moving into Placitas because we had found it.
How did you find it?
Just by ever widening circles of exploration.
Okay. But you knew you were looking for something different than downtown Albuquerque.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
we fell in love with Corrales, too, but crossing the river was not a good thing, you know, as a commute.
Right.
As a daily commute. And it's a different kind of community. This seemed more like us than, yeah.
And have you changed residences since you've been in Placitas?
I changed once. Been in my current house now for... Gosh, 20 years.
Okay. 20 years. Upsize, downsize, or you just want something different?
Downsize and be single.
Okay.
Sort of.
As single as anyone in these days.
Well, you know, I have a partner, Wayne Micas, who is also an artist, and we met in Santa Fe showing at the same gallery over 20 years ago, obviously. And we started collaborating, and a few years later formed Convergence Studios. You can see find a link to our website when you go to the PlacitasStudioTour.com.
Which is Mother's Day of this
year. Mother's
Day
weekend, May 7th and 8th.
That's right.
Let's see, where was I going with that?
You started working collaboratively.
Yes, and so shortly after I moved here, Wayne decided to move here too. So we are neighbors.
Oh.
And have been neighbors for and partners, but have kept our own homes. But we share a studio space.
But you were working collaboratively before he lived in Placitas.
We started collaborating by passing one piece of paper art back and forth, handing it off at the gallery in Santa Fe where we were both showing. Mm-hmm. And that led to doing a series of monotypes together and working back-to-back at the Monathon, which used to be a fundraiser for the art school.
And for those of us who are not artistically inclined.
What is a monotype?
Yes.
A monotype is a print that is only happens one time, hence mono, one print. You paint directly on the plate and then print the plate.
Okay.
And run it basically through an etching press, although you could run over it with your car, or lots of people have figured out other ways to do them. The unique thing about them is that you can get effects on a plate with paint and different viscosities of thinner and so forth that you can't actually produce on paper directly. But you can produce it on a plate, which is plexiglass.
Right.
Or usually plexiglass. And then it comes across in the paper. It transfers to the paper. So that's what a monotype is.
This all
is.
Sounds very technical, and not to get away from your collaboration. Mm-hmm. This kind of correlates to being a really good cook because you've just learned to be versus classically trained. The art that you're talking about sounds somewhat technical. Do most people who are thinking about getting into art, should they consider an art institute, or can you do this with YouTube?
Well, that's, I guess now you can probably learn quite a bit on YouTube. Of course, I went to art school, and so I got a very, very strong fundamental training, figure drawing and composition and color and blah, blah, blah.
No math.
I took physics for artists, okay. Got an A. But people can make art any way they're moved to make it. Training, no training, the inspiration or
but some of the technical techniques.
But I think technically, if you want to do something that's technical, you really need a grounding. So either take a class or a workshop. Mm-hmm. There are lots of them. If you're coming to it late, you're not starting out like I did, by focusing on art in high school and then going to an art school.
Right.
So if you're retiring now and you think, I've been dabbling for a while, but I really want to pursue this, then I definitely say yes, because if you can handle your materials, then you're not hung up in how do I handle my materials. You can actually just concentrate on whatever you're inspired to create.
Right.
If you're messing around with, I just don't know how to, how do I hold the brush?
Two parts of this, one part
right.
of that.
So definitely, mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, and Placitas being such a heavy concentration of artists with all different types of art, and so people of your caliber, do you ever take on apprentices or anything?
I've never taken on an apprentice, but I have coached people, and Wayne has too. And he's actually even taught. But we have done collab. We did a little thing at Alfred University for 2 weeks as artists in residence and taught collaborative process to the students, and can do workshops here for people who are interested in collaboration. We may do something for lifelong learning this next fall,
right,
in Albuquerque. And I think there are lots of artists on the tour who would help somebody along if they're interested in learning something.
Right.
And then there are also, a ton of people who do workshops all over the place, so you can combine travel with
right.
learning something.
I used to do that with scuba diving, because
most
places where you scuba dive, there's
it's
nothing
wonderful.
Else to do but drink, which is okay too. But
but the places you go are pretty wonderful.
Yes.
And so, so you can look for something like that too. I definitely think, don't spend time fumbling around with stuff you can learn.
Right.
Okay. And then the other thing is, because people come in our studio and they're looking at abstract art and they think that might be easier than painting a tree or a cloud. And so here's this word of caution. It's much easier to do abstract art if you can already draw a tree and a cloud.
Okay. So it's a process. You have to learn to do the tree before you can
do... I think it gives you a lot more freedom.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your neighbor, partner, collaborator...
Wayne.
Hi, Wayne. Instead of just calling that guy.
Yeah.
Is that common to two artists working on the same thing?
Definitely not.
Because I know artists don't have a reputation for being temperamental, like chefs.
Oh,
they're all easygoing folks.
No, no, we leave our egos at the door. Hmm. But actually, we do leave our egos at the door when we're collaborating. And it is pretty magical and very unusual for two artists to be able to do what we do. But we have been able to teach some techniques for doing it. There are artists who do, I remember there was a couple that did watercolors in Santa Fe, and one of them did the landscape and the other one did the buildings. So okay. That's not the kind of collaboration we do. We
right.
paint at the same time on the same canvas.
At the same time?
Oh, yeah. Actually, there's a video on our website.
Okay.
So,
it's not like WWE wrestling
not,
where you tag
we
out.
Are, the passing back and forth thing only lasted a very short time before we started actually working together at the same time. And it is, I mean, we had similar palettes. We made some similar marks individually and still do because we still also work individually. But we realized that there was something interesting about what happened when we combined. And I'll tell you a little story. When we, that first piece, Wayne started that very first piece on paper and he handed it to me and I brought it home, put it in my studio and it sat there for 2 weeks before I ever touched it. I mean, that's the typical reaction.
But you
looked
at it.
What am I going to do? Well, I looked at it every day, but it was like, right. What am I going to do to it? Because it's his at this point. And then one night I went out and put just one little light on and looked at it at night
mm-hmm.
and immediately saw very clearly what I thought it needed, right?
Sure.
So that was sort of how I got over. It was looking at it in different light. But there is, let's see, it's sort of like, you know, when you're working by yourself, you paint, you make a stroke, you paint a line, and then you back up, you look at it, you mix another color, you might sit down, you might look out the window. When you're collaborating, or at least when we're collaborating, there is no time for that. The decisions that you're making when you paint by yourself are kind of leisurely, unless you're forcing yourself to work fast for some
right.
reason. When you're working with another artist, the changes, the next decision keeps happening much faster because the other person's making some of them. And so the process is accelerated. It's like there are four hands, but the brains are meshed together. It's like one brain and four hands.
Right.
So it's fast. It's fast. And it's...
And these are all abstracts.
Yeah. I mean, occasionally we'll say, oh, let's do a figure.
Right.
But it's still abstracted.
Hey,
it's still very abstracted. And we don't talk about it. We just start.
Okay.
There's no conversation.
But is there an understanding that Wayne does hands much better than I do?
No, because that's not the kind of painting.
Okay.
And hands don't happen. I mean, they might, but...
Right.
No, there is no division of labor. We just do it. Well, there's a little bit of division of labor, I guess. I tend to mix colors more than he does. He likes to just take it direct color.
But in the beginning,
but he'll take the color I just mixed and paint with it. So
don't you in the beginning have to decide we're going to be these are going to be cows?
Absolutely not. No, there aren't even cows. I mean, you have to look at it.
You just go in and
we just start. If we have a commission, like we did the video that you see on our website was taken when we were painting two versions of a diptych. We had a commission to do a diptych. So whenever we have a commission, we do two. We do two versions of it. And then whoever has commissioned it chooses one of those. And we have the other one. That's what you see happen in the video. And so in that case, we were working to a certain palette for these people.
Right.
It's not, I'm going to paint a painting for your couch, but... But for their home, it did
right.
need to make sense. And so, or they wanted it to make sense in a certain way. And so we did work to that. And so there is a little bit more conversation than normal because of that. But normally, when we start talking about it a lot, we realize we're pretty much done. It's time to back off and do something else.
And before we run out of time, I do want to ask at least one component of an artist's life. I would suspect being in a studio or in a gallery, that's a milestone.
It is, or it used to be, actually. I think with the advent of the internet, it's changed a little bit. And that was also, the internet came along right around the time when we pulled out of a lot of galleries. I think the gallery scene has changed a great deal. But sure, it's a milestone to get into a gallery. It's, you know.
And any advice to people who want to be in a gallery?
Don't give up. If you want to be, just keep trying.
Will you just talk to the gallery owner and say, here's my
portfolio? You submit. Every gallery is different, you know. Most of them now have a process.
I guess along those lines, because of the internet, is it easier to eke out a living than 20 years ago?
I'm the wrong person to ask.
Okay.
Yes, eking is, you know, you do eke. But I don't know that the internet, I think the internet helps some people. It depends on how well you use it. It helps some people more than others. Other social media besides just having a website. A website by itself doesn't do anything for you. You have to make people look at it.
Exactly. I've always said people have to know who you are before they go to your website. Mm-hmm. The trick is getting them to know what website to go to.
Sure.
So
they want to go to PlacidaStudioTour.com. That's the one.
Yes.
At this time of year.
Of course, because they need to mark out Mother's Day in May, which is the
7th and 8th.
What time does it start?
10 to 5, both days.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about...
Don't come before 10 because no one will be... they'll still be drinking coffee.
Let's wrap up with etiquette. It's a long day. Is it okay to ask to use the facilities at a... studio?
If a studio has facilities, they'll probably have a little sign on it that says you can or you can't, or ask them. I don't have facilities at my home. We have facilities available at the Merck and at Anasazi Fields Winery, which is one of the studio sites as well.
Right.
And so there are spots along the way. And some people do have a lovely bathroom in their studio.
Right.
Some people don't.
Plan ahead.
Plan ahead. Yes, definitely. Wear sturdy shoes.
Yes.
But the artists will offer refreshments. So don't worry about getting hungry. Although there are places, of course, to eat, too.
Of course.
In Placidas.
Fortunately, there's no tapas bar.
No, no, but...
Yeah. Still good stuff.
You won't go hungry.
No. Pricing. Especially people who are new to buying art. Mm-hmm. Is... what you see, what you get, or can you ask politely if they would accept a little bit less?
It's sort of insulting to be asked that, in my opinion. Okay. But
well, that's who we're talking to.
Yeah. Well, we urge the artists to mark everything so you don't have to ask what something costs,
right?
Because people are sometimes shy to do that. Some people do have one bin or something of special stuff for the studio tour at a specially priced for the tour. Other people most of us have a wide range of prices. I mean, for instance, you know, we have paintings that are $14,000, but we have cards that we make, handmade cards that are $15. So I think most people have a big price range, and some people... I would just say, you know, there's a big price range.
Okay.
And we do a discount if people buy more than one piece.
Right.
So, you know, don't be afraid to ask people, but this is not a garage sale.
Right.
It's a studio offering.
And that's why we're asking about protocol.
Yeah. And the thing is, see, if you're in a gallery and you undercut your gallery at the studio tour, that'll be the day the person from the gallery comes to see you.
Oh, sure.
So you don't do that either. That's bad etiquette on the artist's part.
But bad business.
Yeah. So there you go. Those are the answers to the pricing questions.
Well, largely, we have been speaking with Rhea Rothberg about the Placidas Studio Tour this coming Mother's Day. Don't come before 10 a.m.
Come right at 10 a.m. We'll be so ready.
And it is PlacidaStudioTour.com.
Correct.
Will you be in your studio?
I will. You bet. So, and I don't even know my studio number. That's terrible. But it's not number one? I've been too busy. No, sort of in the middle.
Okay.
You'll find me.
Are the numbers geographical? The
basically, yes. All based on coming off of 165, Highway 165.
So would you suggest starting at one, working your way up, or starting the high number?
This is the year that we start with number one at Joan Fennecle's, which is all the way through and beyond the village. So
She gets the 10 a.m. people.
She gets, well, you know, the thing is people peel off as they're driving up. They see a sign and they go, oh, let's just start here.
Sure.
But I think the best way to do it is to look at who you're interested in and then start at one end and sort of go to the other end,
right.
Obviously, otherwise you'll be driving back and forth and backtracking. But,
All right.
I think it makes sense to go both by interest and geographic location.
You have a lovely brochure here. Is that available around town?
It will be at the sponsors. It'll be at every studio.
Okay.
So when you get off the highway, just come up to whatever studio you start at, and they'll have a pile of them for you if you haven't happened to go by one of the sponsors. And we will, artists will take them into town and drop them off here and there too, wherever they go. Their hairdresser, their framer,
If none of that is convenient for you,
you've got the website. And the whole brochure is on the website.
Go to the website. I know from my personal experience, as you said, it is impossible to see them all in a day.
Almost.
Well, unless that is your mission.
You can see it in 2 days.
Yeah. So to do your homework, figure out which ones you want to go to. Mm-hmm. It's like which open houses you want to go to when you're buying a house.
It's fun homework.
Yes.
Well, and there's no grading.
Not even on the curve? I always relied on the curve. thank you, Rhea Rothberg. We're talking about the Placitas Studio Tour at PlacitasStudioTour.com. And it's every year. This is year 19.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much for letting us share.
And this has been Conversations with Matthew Bronson on KUPR 99.9 here in Placitas, New Mexico. So until next time, I guess keep talking. Can that be my tag word?
Sounds good. Thank you.